LP3.
What's happening?
Pull that up a little closer. Yeah, my equipment is not as good as the NBC equipment. I'm sorry. Lafitte Bekai the Third. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Not bad. It took until what, Friday afternoon before I'd seen you.
Just looking in the wrong places, Steve.
That's true. That's true. Because I have my own. I don't know. I'm here till 9 o'clock in the morning. Then I go and dre around Los Angeles.
Yeah, other ways to prepare for the Breeders' Cup than socializing over coffee and free breakfast, you know?
Well, and by the time I'm done, most of the socializing is in the books, you know? People have come and they've gone. But the weekend came and went, and I won't have a chance to watch the broadcasts until I get home. How did everybody handle everything?
I think very proud of our coverage. Everything felt normal for a while. We got through Future Stars Friday, and it went without incident. And midway through Saturday, you were so caught up in the championship race, and you were so caught up in the stories. Everything felt normal. It felt like Breeders' Cup. And I think Tim Layden's headline said it best. You know, one furlong short.
Well, and that I think is being echoed everywhere. And you know, in some cases, there are people who weren't even aware for a while. Yeah, I did not know until Baffert listening in on some Baffert questions.
It was the dichotomy of the scene with Vino Rosso and Mike Rapoli and Viola and all their friends and all their family and Todd Pletcher. Like, that is the essence of the Breeders' Cup. That's what it looks like, sounds like, feels like. To win a Breeders' Cup event, to win a Breeders' Cup Classic. This guy had a pretty nice celebration on Friday, Peter Ertin. And you're watching that, and then it's brought to your attention that somebody didn't make it to the wire. And it's the microcosm of the highs and lows in this sport all happening simultaneously.
How did you guys handle it on the network?
I watching it on a monitor, and I missed it. I did not see Mongolian Groom take a bad step. I was focused in at the time on McKenzie and Vino Rosso. I missed it. It was brought to my attention that Mongolian Groom had been pulled up, and I went immediately up towards the top of the track to talk to one of the vets. It was, I think, a while we were trying to gather some information before passing along to the audience who may or may not have seen it. Watching the replay from home, it's like, how did you miss it? But watching a race live, it's different. There's a lot going on. There's a million people I'm watching it with in a monitor in the winner's circle. And eventually, once we did have some information, we were able to talk to a vet and just pass that along, the injury. And obviously, at the time, we didn't know that it would be a catastrophic injury. And the information that we had readily available is all we had to pass along at that moment.
Well, and then a good, hour later, give or take, the news coming. You mentioned the family celebration, and I'll hand this microphone to Peter. For the second time in 3 years, one of our on-site celebratory conversations is with Peter Ertin, because 3 years ago it was Champagne Room we were talking about, and of course Storm the Court. You've now got yourself a juvenile filly and a juvenile victory, a couple of trophies at home.
Yes, no, it's quite a good feeling, I gotta be honest. It's a big surprise. I'll be honest with you, it was a huge surprise. I didn't expect, but when the gate opened and the inside horse didn't break as well, and then we were given the lead, there was a thought that maybe he might do the same thing as he did in his maiden win, because he is so brave. You know, he seems to run best right now on the lead versus just tracking horses. Because I think you may have seen his workout with Mo Mississippi. He put him to sleep behind Mo for a good while, and then he tried to get him to respond, and he did, but it wasn't the same as it is when he's in front and doesn't like to let horses by.
Well, and you put the blinkers on him too, and at that point, when you've got him, you know, when you've got him running, you know, it seems to work. I mean, it obviously didn't bother him at all. He seemed to respond to the blinkers.
yeah, he's had him on for a good 3 weeks since the American Pharoah, and his first work after the American Pharoah, we worked him without him because we didn't want to be fooled by how fresh he was and have him too keen. And then the second and third works after that, it was just a no-brainer to keep him on because his focus was 100% versus kind of a, he'd get into the bridle, then he'd kind of look around, and then he'd get back in it. So it's something that Flavian was aware of and brought it to our attention.
Well, it's just strictly became a matter of controlling the pace up front, and then he was tackled by one of the other surprise horses of the weekend. Blaine Wright comes to town with Mr. Redicop's mystery horse, essentially, coming off of a turf mile, and a no door threatened, but just could not get in front.
No, you know what? You look at the horse of Blaine's, and his horse ran absolutely huge, and to be denied a little bit, but he actually may have gotten by me. I'm not 100% sure.
Did he get ahead in front or nose in front?
And I think with the blinkers added, he really didn't see him coming. Versus in Del Mar, when he could actually see the horse coming, he responded much earlier. But we're lucky to have some horse left. And I think a lot of it had to do with Bob sitting, giving him a little breather down the backside by giving us a whole length of space versus, right on our nose and knowing that we might have a chance to go all the way. I think he probably at that point took us for granted a little bit. And why shouldn't he? 60, 40, 50 to 1. I'd have done the same. But he was in a perfect spot, I thought Bob was. I think he wouldn't change places at all.
As it turns out, no. And, you know, winner at first asking at Del Mar, going 5.5, and then part of the incident with 8 rings in the futurity. And several times over the last several weeks on air, I kept saying, you know, Storm the Court, it's sort of an incomplete record. And, you know, everybody focusing on Dennis's moment and 8 rings with the two dash lines in their PPs. And that Storm the Court, you didn't necessarily have a complete read on his trajectory and his development when you've got that incomplete race, you know, mixed into his PPs.
No, that's one of the reasons why we did come back and run him again in the American Pharoah, because we didn't really have any idea just how good he was. And how are you going to pass up that opportunity to run a horse like that when, you know, he loves the racetrack? Speed's got such a big advantage here. And the one breaks slow, and then the American Pharoah. What was the other horse, the other American Pharoah that scratched, or didn't really scratch, wasn't able to enter of, what's his name? Can you guys remember the other American Pharoah? Because he was a big part of the speed, too. So it just...
American Theorem.
American Theorem.
Papa
Padromo's horse. And so it just... everything just worked out well for us.
For the handicappers, I think they, up until a few days before the race, 3-horse race, Maxfield, 8 rings, Dennis's moment, just turn the page, move right along.
Yeah.
And then Maxfield's out. Dennis's moment drawn inside, really no bargain. There was some negative vibes about 8 rings that it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't impressing. I just lost the headset. What's up with your equipment here, Steve?
That's a brand new headset.
Good God.
There we go.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then he wasn't, you know, lighting up the track in the morning either. So all of a sudden, it seemed like there was opportunity for another, and Storm the Court takes full advantage. And, you know, there are certain performances on Breeders' Cup stages that we'll never forget where we were. We'll never forget how we felt when we watched it. And there are certain stories that unfold after. And Peter, watching you and Brittany is going to be a Breeders' Cup moment.
Yeah,
that is going to be one of the lasting impressions.
I'll be watching that for a long time to come. I mean, that was her reaction the last 16th of a mile was epic, but it was so much fun.
She gets more excited than you do.
She does. She does.
I can recall 3 years ago when Champagne Room won, and she was quivering. She was just like hyperventilating.
We watched that together that day. We watched that. Yeah. And funny enough, we got the same box seat as we sat in 3 years ago, which is really weird. didn't ask for it, but it's kind of, maybe that's a lucky seat. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to get a nameplate put on.
I'm not going to ask for it because that would be, but if it happened to get it, who cares? You know.
This was a $60,000 purchase. We should talk about Ryan Exline and give us a you know, all the picture going back to OBS April.
We were looking. We were probably somewhere at another barn when Moret called us up and says, "There's this horse in the ring, not in the ring, actually in the back ring, that's walking around, and I really like him." I don't know how I missed telling you about him earlier, but so we ran over there. We looked at him. We liked what we saw in the back ring. We went and saw his video, and it was a no-brainer. You know, I mean, here's a horse that sold for $5,000 as a weanling, and then we purchased him for $60,000. It all worked out really well. Then we find out that he's not Breeders' Cup nominated for his first race. So the way he trained, why not? So we put up the $12,000. Now we're essentially the breeder. As far as the awards go, so the clients did got paid back on that pretty good. So I mean, I'm so happy they decided to do that and not. So
too early to bug you about plans.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to do anything silly and run him back at LaSalle, or which isn't silly. I mean, it's a great opportunity to continue the run, but we're going to more than likely wait till January and kind of like figure out what we want to do. Let the horse, he's grown so much in the last 3-4 months, and give him a chance to fill out a little bit. We won't take him out of training, so to speak, but just kind of lighten it up a bit.
Just thinking back to Take Charge Brandy.
I was just about to say.
She won the Juvenile Fillies at 62-1, came back and won the Starlet. Mm-hmm. Another grade one win, crowned 2-year-old filly champion.
And, the Delta Princess.
Did she run in the Princess?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And somehow, I mean, she rested the championship.
Well, the Eclipse is really important to us too. I mean, that would be.
I want to take a look.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a given who's going to win it yet. I mean,
no,
there's a nice horse that won the Champagne. He's going to come back, right? Was it the Champagne?
Remsen, maybe next.
Probably.
Yeah.
'Tis the law.
There's no more grade ones, but that shouldn't. I mean. He's a really nice colt, so.
And the Breeders' Cup isn't the end-all, be-all for the 2-year-old races. It's heavier weight. It is a final exam, and you combine that win, much like we're
there's
talking
a lot
about
of
Take Charge Brandy, and then another towards the end.
Yeah. And also, there's a lot of time between now and May of a lot of genuinely good 3-year-olds can come out of the woodwork, you know, as we know. Justifies for one. I mean, there's a horse that ever even ran as a 2-year-old. I mean, has anybody ever done that? I don't think so.
No.
So there's a lot of opportunity. It's going to come up to be a lot of fun. That's what makes it all so much fun, is trying to plan something.
You talk about the purchase and where this horse started out. First of all, being by Court Vision, and who was standing in Pennsylvania, 3,500. Out of a Tejano run mare, there was really any kind of potential to, you know, the Court. You know, Court Vision is an interesting sire too, and you know, the potential on the turf and the main. I mean, what was your tableau to start with him? I mean, did you think, you know, of course, OBS, you're on synthetic watching the breeze, so was there turf consideration? I mean, how did you view him as you got your eyes on him and hands on him regularly?
Not really thinking about turf. The only time I'll start thinking about turf on a horse, even looking it up or asking questions, is if they're not working very well on dirt. And then I'll look into their pedigree and say, well, is there any turf in there? Because he's not really doing much. But he did everything right when it comes to working and training forwardly. So, actually, no. But we do know that he does have a tremendous amount of pedigree for the grass, and he's got such a great mind that I think he could settle off the pace in a turf race. But we're not really thinking about that right now.
Yeah, and the $60,000 purchase price, you know, is right in virtually everybody's budget that operates in the game. These stories are so encouraging. It Yeah, I thought between, coincidentally, of course, British idiom by flashback, who's standing in Louisiana for 3,500. So, you know,
40,000 British idiom.
It's amazing. I mean, it's one of the things that I think motivates people when they see that it, you know, you don't have to buy one for, you know, for six figures, high six figures or seven figures to get to this level.
Well, that's the way this game has always been. I mean, from as far back as I can remember, there's always been those purchases that allow the average guy to get be at the top level for not a whole lot of money. So, and that continues to be that way. So, that's great.
That was cool to watch in the Juvenile Fillies. It was Donna Veloce, $800,000 purchase, mm-hmm. British Idiom, $40,000 purchase, yeah. In those two, slugging it out.
Well, that was that a race, or I mean, she the one who got her, I think, got her beat, but
didn't help. Look, though, that wasn't about brilliance. That was a battle of attrition. British Idiom and Donna Veloce. Those were two tired fillies late.
Would they run the mile 16:47, something like that?
Wouldn't fast.
It, on that topic, and of course, speaking of the rail, the Giant Expectations. Right, was down inside.
Yeah, he's in the one hole,
and that was that was he was you know, a lot of people thought he was clever in a clever spot in the dirt mile. There he had his backers.
The thing about the two turns for him is, and he's broke bad several occasions,
yes.
And he's run well. The thing about going a one turn 7/8 or a one turn mile, he's got a lot of time to get outside instead of getting trapped inside the whole time. When you're that far out of it, in a sprint 7/8 of a mile, you can just clear outside and get yourself out of the dirt and this and that. And think about a mile, you're stuck in it. I mean, you're going to the first turn, so you got to go left. You got to stay behind everybody. You can't just go into the first turn 8 wide. So that's the biggest problem. And then he broke slow. He didn't ask him to run at all, even there. So he just kind of let him settle back there, and he just got to where he didn't tolerate it anymore. So
it's amazing how differently we look at, you know, the maybe it's handicapping or a level of prestige. You look at a Met mile, you look at a Breeders' Cup Dirt mile, and what a difference just the circumference of a racetrack makes. The difference between a one turn mile versus a two turn mile,
it's completely different race.
You know, it's more about maybe the trip and racing luck than overall God-given talent.
Honestly, I don't really think he loves this racetrack. I mean, he did win the San Antonio on it, but that was a few years ago before all the problems that we're having. And the track is, to be honest, much slower than now.
And the kickback is a real kickback
is a bear. Del Mar, he loves that racetrack. He loves New York tracks. I mean, he likes...
Well, and there he gets the configuration that, you know, that would be preferable.
Santa Anita, just for some reason, he hasn't really clicked here. He's had some poor outings here.
Now, while we're at it, telling you how to run your operation for the cigar mile next.
That's still in our thoughts, too.
Good. Yeah,
we're
going
to see just how, I mean, he didn't take anything much out of him. He got a couple scratches from the break, but he tends to get a lot of those.
We heard from when Donna Brothers was talking to Javier Castellano right after the Juvenile Fillies with British Idiom, and that's what he was talking about, what he was most proud of. You know, just the lack of experience, just a third career start, to be exposed to that kind of kickback. And, I mean, she was covered. He was covered.
Yeah,
and for her to bear down and run right through it is what
impressive.
Impressed him most. Yeah.
If you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And then that's what we miss here is those kind of races where you can see that horse. Because the kickback is a lot different here. I mean, it comes back, I think, from what I've been told from the jocks, it hurts.
Yeah.
And if they could do anything to help that out, that would be good. Because everybody's thinking if they're not 1, 2, 3, 4 within 2, 3 lengths of the lead, you're not going to get anything. And that's their thought process leaving the gate. So you turn in a late closing horse into a horse that's got to stay up into the race. The separation between first and last is quite a bit.
Sure.
I mean, it's not by coincidence that you see such close fields finishes on the turf.
The dirt race.
They're allowed to run their race.
Yeah, when you have a situation where some horses really taken to the track and others are just kind of spinning their wheels,
the footing is one thing, but the kickback shouldn't influence the outcome of a race.
No.
Beside, of course, your second Breeders' Cup winner, and you know your record. I think you got the two wins in 10 starts total. Weemis Frankie ran a big race going back a few years.
She did. Who won that race? You guys remember? It was a really nice filly of Steve's.
Asmussen. My Miss Aurelia.
Yeah. Sounds
nobody
right.
was going to beat her.
No.
She was freaky talented.
She was good.
You've also got a horse I want to bring up that won a couple of weeks ago at the start of the meet, that Warrior's Moon.
She's a California-bred filly. I think she could have won her first start on grass in Del Mar. I think she may have gotten moved a bit early. And then she showed her stuff the other day. But I think the filly that won that race ended up winning an open-ended stake race. Her name was Warrior's, another Warrior horse, Craig Lewis's.
Yes.
And then he put her in the dirt the other day and didn't quite do as well. But,
no.
We're just going to wait for her until we find another than for Calbreds, but if not, we'll have to run her against open company.
Now you had a very good meet, actually, when you think about it, right? You had an older Calbred filly.
Doc Eco Cheeks.
What, explain the name.
Great name.
I don't know if I'm butchering the middle name, Eco. A lot of people call it Wyco, but this is Alicia's doctor. Is Dr. Eco. Wyco Rico.
Okay.
And then she's out of Sandy Cheeks, so that's where that came from. Okay, Sharon comes right, up good. With some really original names, and we love her for it. So she enjoys naming the horses.
Oh, it's fun. It's challenging. There's times when you send them in and they X them out for some one silly reason or another. Yeah.
What's the biggest difference, Peter, when you the morning after a win like on a Breeders' Cup stage, especially perhaps an unexpected win on a Breeders' Cup stage, you experienced it twice, showing up at the barn and seeing everybody the following morning.
It's a lot of fun.
Like?
It is a ton of fun just to amongst your peers, and just in your barn, and how much everybody enjoyed it, all the accolades you get. It's almost as much fun as that day, showing
itself.
Up the next morning. I think I was here at, I couldn't sleep very well. And so I got here like about 4:15, 4:30, and the track was only open till 6, so it wasn't like there was a lot.
That's
we were
true.
Out of here. We were out
That's
of here
true.
Like an hour later, so.
Yeah,
so I think I went home and took an hour nap and got back here for Saturday's card, but it's hard to explain how much fun it is.
What's the taco joint I heard it was a taco party.
It's funny, me, Britt, and my wife, we just stayed home and made it Taco Friday at home. So
I told Britt on the air, I'd say school night, Britt. It's a school night. We have
she
to come
had,
back and
she
do
had
this
to work.
Tomorrow.
We did go out the next night. We went to Celestino's nice Italian place.
Ah, yeah, Celestino, absolutely.
On the lake, and then we made an appearance at the Langham. And stayed there till about 11 or so. So we kind of celebrated the following day. Everybody was same ownership. They were a little down at the races for Saturday because of Giants race, but they got back motivated at the dinner.
You'll take the split.
Yeah, we'll take that split any day.
Yeah, if somebody told you you're going to win, you're going to send out two on Breeders' Cup weekend. You're going to win one and be up the track, I think you take it. I think
he came back well. We forgot about the race already. You know, so
he's run three straight years, hasn't he, in Breeders' Cup?
He has, and it's not been his best gig. I mean, even in the Pegasus, he's had some tough times. They're all wrong distances for him, from the Santa Anita handicap at a mile and a quarter to Pegasus out of the 12 hole. Breeders' Cup last year, I his race that he run prior to the month before was a big race. He ran that day, and I thought he would. But that track, it's different from day to day, race to race, and it was just a bit loose for him.
He has that ability. He has it. You watch that Catalina Cruiser race where it looks like he's going to beat Catalina Cruiser before. Like he has it. He does have the ability.
He does have it. At 6 years old, and we hope he.
And he's a horse. He's not a gelding.
He's still a horse.
Yeah,
we're
a frost giant.
Grade one, if we can, and maybe somebody'll. I want to make him a sire by Frost Giant, but he'll keep running as long as he's healthy.
Well, Peter, you've done it again. I can't, you know, be happier for you, and it's become a tradition. I assume there's going to be more.
I wouldn't call it a tradition.
It's a tradition. the Monday after Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita, yeah. You come on live.
Yeah. Well, when do they do back here again? Not for a while.
We'll see about that. Yeah, we'll see.
Oh, come on, Steve.
There's no way to know.
You got to be optimistic here.
Well, it's hard. It's a challenge.
They've tried so hard, and they're doing such an awesome job, and it's just unfortunate that happened.
Now, the thing to do is to focus on, you know, on all the positives, and one thing it certainly demonstrates is just how elusive this task is. Whether it's looking on paper for red flags, whether it's pre-race examinations, yeah. Scans, everything else, and you know, one of the biggest challenges is that invariably there's going to be horses that don't present any negatives. They can palpate, they can do everything they want. I know that this is not going to help any of us in the mainstream press, but to try to explain to somebody that a hind ankle is not a typical, we don't see horses going wrong with hind ankle injuries. It's just,
there's not a lot of interest in details.
Nobody seems to want to hear any of the, you know, the material elements of this. They want to make summary judgments about what's involved and who's involved, and there's no ready solutions. There's only the care
of
horsemen.
Every one of them is different.
Exactly.
You cannot focus on one thing and attack that. But
no,
we at this stage right now, given the climate, it feels as though you can have an entire summer of racing at Del Mar without one catastrophic injury, not one, an entire summer. And the way things are right now, if there is one horse injured who winds up having to be euthanized, you're back to square one.
I agree, and that's what's so arduous is that because it is mercurial and because it's random in a lot of ways, we can't. I've been saying for years, Chuck Simon was the first person 10 years ago to start saying, don't try to make safety, quote unquote, and fatality statistics a marketing tool. It's not going to ever be, because there's going to be clusters, there's going to be circumstances. This game is played outdoors on whether it's synthetics or whether it's on dirt and grass. There are ambient conditions. This is dangerous. And why is that so difficult for a certain group of people observing or reading casually to understand? It's dangerous.
No, I think they must realize that. They're not saying that they don't.
No, they're not acknowledging it, Peter.
No,
they don't care. They're just making a judgment that we're bad people and that we're cruel and we're abusing horses. You can't have any discussion about it. It's just this. This is a society issue, not specific to our industry.
And dealing with a lot of people who don't know anything about the game, are uneducated about the details and what we're actually dealing with, and have already made up their mind.
Yep.
Just looking for more statistics to back up an argument, but have already made up their mind about how they feel about this sport.
And they have a lot of influence.
That's a problem. Yeah.
That is a problem. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I mean, all we can do is keep trying for zero tolerance, but it's near to impossible.
Of course. And frankly, if you look at the overall statistics, if you want to use statistics or discuss them, industry-wide, it continues to improve because there are things being addressed that have never been. We've made more progress in the last 10 years and even in the last 5 years. Yeah. I mean, the necropsies, the widening demand and insistence on necropsies for any fatality, so we can understand better. I mean, and these are all, you know, for us as an industry to be assailed and to have people say things without having any knowledge of where things have been and where we are now is just unbelievably unfair, because after every single high profile incident, the industry has tried to double down and do better and better. And whether you want to talk Barbaro and then the learning, I mean, on laminitis and so many other things that came out of that, eight bells, I mean, one thing after another, after the 2012 spate of injuries at Aqueduct and the task force and all the things that came out of that. Every time there's been anything that we can learn from, we have, and we're better now for it and continue to get better. And yet, no matter what you do, if there's going to be outside pressure or outside, you know, microscopic examination, you're never going to satisfy, because there's going to be incidents, yes, period. And they're not going to accept that. And I to me, you've got to come right at them instead of trying to be defensive. Because until the entire world is eating plant-based foods, then I don't want to hear from anybody. The only people I respect in this are actual vegans and people who are you know, won't wear leather. And I mean, okay, you
that's
respect.
Funny, Steve. But there is, you know, action being taken, precaution. You know, 2 years ago, does Imperial Hint get scratched last year?
Maybe. They did it to Polydream. Okay. Freddy Head! You think Freddy Head is going to run a horse that is compromised? Freddy Head!
Fleeting.
That's hard to know. I mean, how about yesterday?
How many scratches did we get out of there?
Like,
I mean, there
five?
Must have been,
yeah,
at least,
yeah,
five scratches. I mean, it's not like these guys brought
going
horses.
Going over them with a fine-tooth comb, and again, action being taken that perhaps we may not have seen prior, and trying to take every precautionary step that can possibly be taken, that these horses are. Look, like in the NFL right now, we're in week 9, week 10. There is not one player out there who's 100% healthy. Everybody's banged up in some capacity.
Yeah.
And for the racehorses themselves, they are athletes also. And the precautionary stuff that's going on now, and making sure that every horse that goes out there has been gone over, especially for the Breeders' Cup competition, and with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that the vets feel that they are ready.
I don't
ready
know how much finer you can get. I mean,
exactly.
It has been good. I mean, when Johnny had his little issue here at the Gap, I mean, they must have checked him out a half dozen times just to make sure everything was good. He never hit his head.
When he flipped,
yeah. And that was fine with me. And if something was wrong and they scratched him, okay, so be it. That's okay, you know. But they did what they had to do, and it's unfortunate that, you know, that one. I'm sure this horse was 100% going into it, and you know, fatigue is a big factor in any sport, you know.
Well, you can dress this as well as anyone, and we're going to talk to certainly the rest of the week. We'll talk to more horsemen. There's a case to be made that having a track so deep and so arduous is actually on the flip side. They may think, oh, well, the slower is safer. That's not necessarily true. And especially if there's a horse harboring fissures and issues unforeseen, making them labor and tire over a track that's too deep isn't doing anybody any favors.
Well, I think everybody would agree with you there. I mean, I think we want a track that's level, so where they land their feet, everything is equal, and they don't have anything they're stepping in that's unequal, and has a bit of a bounce to it, life.
That they get energy from, not energy taken away from them.
Exactly. No, I'll agree with you 100%, and I think you won't get any argument from anybody about that.
Except that the 109 in the sprint, that's the one. A horse like Mattoli, that
was pretty remarkable, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic for, you know, for racetrack practitioners to maybe they could help. But I think horsemen understand it the best. I mean, you. I mean, you don't want a horse coming back, I mean, blowing after every gallop. I mean, I just find this so maddening, Peter.
I think it's going to be ongoing where they try to find the perfect racetrack, and I don't know if there ever is a perfect racetrack.
How did you fare over the synthetics during the synthetic generation, and how welcome
We did well over the synthetic. I don't know if that's if that's the answer or not. We bought a lot of horses off of synthetic, and they transferred over here to be useful horses. If that's what it takes to keep this ball rolling, then I'm whatever it takes, because I don't want to see anything happen here.
Synthetics, they had, the cushion that they had at Hollywood was very close to dirt.
That was
here,
the best.
Here
of the
it felt that we had two turf courses for the most part. And you look back at some of those Breeders' Cup results and horses that won races, grass races, winning, main track Breeders' Cup.
It's so hot here, though.
To Raven's Pass.
That's the problem.
And the drainage issue. You had the drainage problem.
It took a long time to find the right for it to cut to work.
I remember they used to ball up on the horse's feet here. So you couldn't keep it out of there because it was the heat and the wax, and this wasn't conducive to sanitary weather.
Michael Dickinson says he can take care of everything. Don't worry about it. Dickinson's.
Okay.
Yeah, Dickinson says, don't worry.
It's working at a different
time. But you're not going to. It's not going to attract horses, though. It's not going to attract a lot of people to come here. That's an issue. I mean.
It changes all the dynamics. It changes the stallion issues. I mean, there's just every part of it is.
If we're going to run 4 or 5 days a week, I can't see synthetic pulling people out of the East Coast to come here. And the money thing. The purses. Or a big issue.
Sure.
Peter, I appreciate the visit, and couldn't be more delighted for you and
thank you,
X-Line team and everybody involved. Storm the Court, 87, and good foundation heading to the end of the year and into his 3-year-old season and continued success.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Always.
Take another look at that low sell race. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That was
appreciate
awesome.
It, Lafitte.
That was awesome.
Peter Erton, Lafitte Pinkai is with us. Let's take our last break of the morning. We'll come right back and wrap up, get some of Lafitte's thoughts on the rest of the cup action. Back after this to Santa Anita.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live like a good boy ought to. And your mama takes a shot to put their son. Something different, all the girls are seeming to like you. Cause you're handsome, like the dog.
We're back at the races. Just about 10 minutes or so, 15. Another tradition. Mondays, tomorrow, John White. Well, John will be here to wrap up with me. Vince DeGregory tomorrow. I have had Vince on, but it was years ago. And I forget what jock he was handling.
He and my father, Steve, did really well together. Really well together for a lot of years in the 70s, and Vince was hard on him. You know, Vince was, you know, you're going to have to, my father hadn't quite established himself yet when they first started working together. And, I mean, from the amount of horses he was working in the morning and what he expected of the rider he was representing, you know, he was hard, but the dividends and the kind of success they had during the time they worked together was incredible.
I'm looking forward to the storylines. Come on, Gary Yount, who I'd love to have. You never come on, Gary Yount.
A great oak tree at Santa Anita sweatshirt.
He's got a collection. How old is your oldest racetrack sweatshirt? Event sweatshirt. What's your oldest, most treasured? 1984 at Hollywood. Churchill from the 80s. I've seen you. I know that you wear that for Derby. Gary's. You must have a collection of 50 of them, and
awesome.
It's hysterical.
That's
one of the great track note veteran turf publicists in the game, Gary Yount, who's got a encyclopedic knowledge. He could actually, in fact. We should have a contest. We should have a John White versus
John
Gary
White.
Yount head-to-head Jeopardy contest. That's what we're going to do. Yeah, we're going to do that.
That would be wildly entertaining.
As schools match wits.
One of those
kinds of things. I'll MC. One of the things I wanted to do, I told your man Lucky. Mm. And by the way, I couldn't pair you up. You were nowhere to be found. I would have loved to have
told you. You were looking in the wrong places.
Well, but he brought Gina Bryce.
Okay. We'll see. It worked out better.
Well, it worked out. I don't know. Luck giving you the business. People really like that. They love that.
You don't want to see what happens when we, after we take off the headsets.
Well, some more thoughts from you. I was going to say, one of the things I wanted to do, I've been planning for weeks, with Brexit going on, we were going to call it Nixit, and we were going to do a quiz, and I was going to ask him five, you know, UK centric questions, and if he couldn't answer at three of them correctly, we were going to declare him like an American, that he had to leave and he's got to come.
He should be losing his accent by now, as is, as much time as he spends here.
It's fair.
It sound like John Wayne walking around.
I asked him a couple of the ones that I had been harboring, and he was 0 for 2. He was behind the eight ball right from the get go. So I don't think he would have survived. We listened at home. We listened to BBC Radio 1 sure. constantly. We love it, and so they've got all these kinds of contests all the time. So I thought I was going to flip it over on him and throw one at him. But everybody wanted handicapping winners. Speaking of which, some of the lasting moments that'll stick with you and what we learned and what we came away with.
I think my biggest disappointment was Sister Charlie. I was expecting more from her. In my mind, she is the most accomplished racehorse I think Chad Brown had ever trained. When you look at her overall body of work and what she's accomplished, Bricks and Mortar now and the kind of season he's had, and I think a front runner for Horse of the Year. But I was expecting a better showing. But we reminded the audience that John Velasquez all along has said, yeah, she's proven on firm ground, but she likes a little bit of cushion, a little bit of cut, a little bit. And this was a very firm turf course. And her last race wasn't Sister Charlie-esque coming in, but it was just a prep, and it was good enough to win a Flower Bowl. And I thought she was one of the most logical winners of the weekend, and I was disappointed just because I'm a racing fan. I thought to start off the weekend with the American Pharaohs with four-wheel drive and the connection there, and then someday would be the answer to a trivia question. So, you know, who were the first American Pharaohs to ever perform on a Breeders' Cup stage? Well, it was four-wheel drive and Another Miracle, and they happened to run 1-3 in the turf sprint. And for Mark Hall, the winning owner, he had Shang last year, who defected,
right,
I think, the morning of the race, and had talked about how disappointing that was, and that maybe this was the horse to make that dream come true in four-wheel drive, and he did. And by the way, if horses could hold grudges, Chimney Rock must absolutely, like, despise Wesley Ward. That is three straight races he has finished second to the three horses that Ward ran in the turf sprint, Cambria, Kamari, and four-wheel drive.
Good job. I love it. I love it. Actually, and Mike Maker's horses ran, the Chimney Rock ran very well, and actually very quietly, Zulu Alpha ran solidly. Didn't run as big as United did. Now, that was something.
That was incredible.
Pratt could have won five.
Yeah.
Had things broken, Donna Veloce could have won. United could have won. Did you see the tweet I put out on yesterday morning?
I didn't. Kind of disconnected yesterday.
His record is now stunning. He's 38 starts, three wins.
How many seconds?
Six or eight thirds, and then another six fourths or fifths.
Wow.
As an in-the-money percentage, and don't forget, a lot of his riding has come in grass races. You know, now he's getting dirt mounts, but his first few years, you know, it's over the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So at least the first two, and then a little bit last year, were mostly grass, which are going to be the most competitive in a lot of ways. They're going to be the most competitive races, and yet he's amassed this tremendous in-the-money record. He's terrific.
He's sensational, and winning the Derby this year, not the way most riders would want to win a Derby, but you can't fault him for that. He's a Derby winner, and winning the Queen's Plate and just riding in all 14 Breeders' Cup races and administering, you know, polished ride after polished ride with pressure on and a big stage. I remember talking about his first Breeders' Cup win with obviously in 16 in the turf sprint. You did it. Ohm?
Oh, please, for the pick six. For the pick six. Not just Ohm on the nose. Cost me five out of six.
That's brutal. Uh-huh. And the rider lost the whip.
And Stevens almost got knocked off. The horse tried to scrape him. Gary told me the next morning, tried to scrape me right off of him.
Yeah, he was a blur in the stretch, just a blur the way he was going. But Pratt, yeah, and getting the win that he with Storm the Court at a massive price. I thought that, you know, it was interesting the story that unfolded amongst the Ortiz brothers and the juvenile turf was you know, jockeys have to make difficult decisions, and IRAD, and I would have made the same decision, opted for Decorated Invader over Structor, and Jose winds up in the saddle. That was an IRAD choice. And you're thinking, you know, because, you know, they have so much success together, he and Chad Brown, and they must really love Decorated Invader, and I did too. I thought he was the horse to beat. And with Structor, and Brown felt that the cutback from the mile and a 16th to the mile would be key. He'd lost so much ground in the Pilgrim with a better trip and inside post. And, you know, that race, that was a mad scramble at the 16th pole. And Structor found another gear. But, you know, there you have the Ortiz brothers run 1-2 in the turf sprint. And then the next race, it's IRAD making the wrong choice and Jose taking full advantage.
We've stressed today, I think, obviously, Vino Rosso with Todd Pletcher earlier. But, you know, it, really, in a lot of ways.
I can't wait to hear from Haskin. About Vino Rosso and how, you know, he's been, you know, the story of him and Justify growing up together as babies.
That's fun, and
you know, this is now it's his moment.
Well, and you know, we didn't get to Graham today, so we'll get Graham Motion tomorrow. And of course, a lot of guys are traveling today. Chad Brown zipped home on the red eye Saturday night because he wanted to be there for that opener yesterday at Aqueduct and Autonomous for Seth Klarman, who, by the way, you'll hear me bang this drum through December, but I would think Bricks and Mortar as horse of the year, or even if Mattoli outpoles him, either way, it's time for Seth Klarman to be owner of the
year. It's supposed to be a given
the last 2 years, 3 years. It's crazy.
I think it's become enough of a narrative, though.
I hope so.
Where it's in the forefront. Take another look, and he should be there.
Well, yesterday, Autonomous, very nice, quality road filly that wins on debut, a Pennsylvania bred, but that was not the story of Aqueduct yesterday. We'll have tomorrow. Aaron Wellman is traveling right now to Kentucky as well.
I've known Aaron for a long, long time. So proud of him. So happy for him.
Well, he must have been like the little kid that everybody picked on.
We were all in Del Mar spending summers together as kids playing baseball on the beach, and we actually played in the same little league together at one point as well. I've known Aaron a long time, and watching him having this kind of success and knowing how much it means to him and with his partners, and the big stage, what that means, and now having won a Belmont Stakes with Taprit and a Breeders' Cup event in that juvenile Phillies turf, I'm really happy for him and the team.
Well, the performance yesterday in the Nashua by Independence Hall, it's just agog. I cannot wait to talk to Mike Trombetta, a 101 buyer for Independence Hall, who's a Constitution, the latest Constitution smash. And after the debut, Aaron and also, I believe that Randy Gulat also at the same time bought in. And I understand that the Varadis, who are the original owners that are staying in, related to the Wyckoffs, who, of course, we know Three Diamonds and Kirk and the whole Jordan and the wonderful owners. And this is an offshoot.
Yeah.
Another horse coming out of Parks, a big weekend. And we've got another day tomorrow to do way more recapping. Steve Asmussen, I got to get to Nacho as well. Brad Cox.
That was awesome. Nacho.
Nacho was unbelievable. Yeah. Juan Carlos Guerrero, did you see him kissing the big ass of of Spun to Run? It was the big ass dirt mile, and he was embracing and kissing.
I would have been too.
Spun Runs.
I would have been too.
There were so many horse people, including Donner Brothers, saying, that's something I've never seen, and it's something I would never do. He literally was behind him, draped on him, kissing him on the behind. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I got a picture, but it's not discernible.
The essence of the Breeders' Cup.
and the voice of the Breeders' Cup, Lafitte Benkei III.
Pleasure, Steve, as always.
Thanks for coming out. I know.
Absolutely.
That, you
know,
what's on your agenda? What's your next assignments?
I get to just kind of relax for a little bit.
It's nice being LP3. Yes. Let me tell you.
The holidays.
The thing that, of course, we never got a chance because I was laid up all Saratoga. You spend a summer in Saratoga.
That would, yeah,
I end up.
How's the eyeball? How's the eye?
It's healed. We don't know.
I can't wait to go back. It was so much fun.
You enjoyed it. It was good, huh?
It was great. I look forward to next summer.
We look forward to every opportunity to talk to Lafitte. I'll be back for Starlet and Futurity, although not on the Monday for a recap, because Symposium, University of Arizona, is the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after. Usually it's the other way around. Usually it's Symposium, and then Wednesday afternoon, come to here, and Thursday, Friday at Los Al, and then Saturday.
Are we going to be able to talk Peter into running Storm the
Court? Probably. If they
want the championship.
If they want the championship.
You know, we'll do our best. We'll twist his arm.
Lafitte Benkei III, everybody. Earlier, Peter Erton, Jay Pribman, Peter Miller.
He's pretty good in turf sprints.
Unbelievable. And poignant. And you think about the two juvenile performances. And Mo Forza, he had a huge weekend. Todd Pletcher started us all off. You can hear the replay if you missed anything tomorrow, 6 to 9, here on SiriusXM. Or come to the website. It'll be up a little bit later for the archive and the pod, and the streams have been working again. A lot more recapping. Johnny D tomorrow. I don't know if Andy, maybe he'll hold Andy till Wednesday. Tons of
He's very
others.
Proud of the New York horses.
I'm very sure he
proud
is.
Proud of the New York
I'm
horses.
Sure he
I think
is.
He pointed 11 or 12 of the winners had
How
raced
about that?
At New York tracks, I believe it was. Something along those lines.
I love it.
Yeah.
Pleasure, Steve. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.